whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Your official station to talk Giants. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Inside the 8 o'clock hour on The Fan in New York. Talking about the New York Giants, New York Jets. But inside of this hour, we will switch to the New York Yankees and the New York Mets. Justin Verlander still out there finessing a bag, $15 million to go to San Francisco. Nobody wants to go out there, but if you're in the last year of your career and you can get $15 million, why not? Sure thing. Go get rocked by the Dodgers and Padres. What was the other update that we heard? Oh, McCarthy. How about them Cowboys? Jerry Jones is the absolute worst. He came out after this season on Sunday saying that, you know, he's never giving up the general manager position of the Dallas Cowboys, which he really should. Like, they're terrible, and they've made a lot of mistakes, and a lot of it is based off of, you know, his stubbornness. He said, I bought my profession. I bought the team to be the general manager. I'm like, good grief. Should have told all the Dallas fans, America's team, to laugh at. Big D stands for big disappointment, big disaster waiting to happen. And yeah, so now, you know, he's just going to drag his feet with Mike McCarthy. Remember, Mike McCarthy had a sleepover at Jerry Jones's house. That's how he got the job. They made popcorn and did each other's nails and watched scary movies. And Jerry Jones said, you're the guy for me. You should let him go, Jerry Jones. And every day that you wait to let Mike McCarthy go, other teams are gaining ground in their interview process in deciding who's going to be their head coach. If you're bringing him back, bring him back. But yeah, he's standing in the way of the Chicago Bears from interviewing Mike McCarthy. I did hear a narrative of Mike McCarthy potentially coming here to coach the Jets. I don't think that's a good idea. Unless you're trying to pair him up with Aaron Rodgers for a year, I don't think it's a good idea. With Jerry Jones in Dallas, the last thing that they had to see was, you know, Mike McCarthy call plays, right? As Kellen Moore is calling plays for the Philadelphia Eagles, as they have a good shot to get to the Super Bowl. They just, you know, why would you bring in Mike McCarthy, who was one of those head coaches that could call plays from the sideline without letting him do what he most famously did? And yeah, they got to see it, but they got to see it mostly with Cooper Rush. How about Jerry Jones saying that he didn't know that Cooper Rush could have made $500,000 by playing in the game Sunday? Not the flex that he thinks it is. You're the GM. You're going to tell the media you didn't know? Well, I'm just going to hope that you're lying. I would hope that you knew the contract incentives for Cooper Rush, your longtime backup quarterback now, for him and his family, for him to play that last game. He didn't even have to play the whole game. He needed maybe like 3% more snaps. Like, I think he needed 75% snaps or some stupid number to cash $500,000. And Jerry Jones didn't let that man do it so that he could feel vindicated by playing Trey Lance, a guy that he traded for and nobody in the league wanted. I've talked about this so many times, giving up a fourth round pick for Trey Lance when you needed a running back, and Bucky Irving went in the fourth round, Braylon Allen went in the fourth round, Tyrone Tracy went in the fifth round. You traded away a 2024 fourth round pick for Trey Lance, and you had to play him. And now he's gone and Cooper Rush is gone. I actually heard a call last night into C-Mac's show where someone suggested Cooper Rush to the Giants. Maybe. Draft a young guy and sign Cooper Rush, maybe. Blake is in Dallas on The Fan in New York.
Up, Keith, how you doing, man?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yes, sir, thanks for taking my call. Die-hard Giant fan. You know, I mean, it's easy to be mad and frustrated over the last like decade. But what do you do, right? You just move on. And I like how you phrased it, you know, what now's the time to dream. And, you know, I've put hypotheticals in my head and what could be done, but you know, look, it's the NFL, man. You know, I mean, 1 year you could be a really, really bad team and it could just take 1 year to get back on track. And we've seen them do that. However, it's not been sustained. So hopefully they could put some moves together that are, you know, give them a little bit of, you know, they got to be competitive, man, for a couple of years. And who knows, maybe it happens. Maybe it doesn't. The chances of it happening next year, you know, could be slim to none. But I'm a little risky, man. If I was the GM and if I was running the Giants, I'd be a little risky. I would make some moves. I think somehow they get Shedeur Sanders. I don't know why. I think Deion is going to try to finagle that to happen.
Yep.
If not, maybe they'll end up with Travis Hunter. I think one of the Colorado boys will be a Giant. But what I would do, honestly, man, I've been talking about this for a while. I would package Dexter Lawrence, man. I would trade Dexter Lawrence. Because you know he's a defensive tackle. You know they come a dime a dozen.
Arguably the best. Yeah. No.
I agree.
He's Aaron Donald in the league now.
No, he's not. He's not Aaron Donald. Don't disrespect Aaron Donald. Like he's not Aaron Donald.
Look at PFF. Look at the numbers. Obviously, he's not Aaron Donald. He's not Aaron Donald because he's not on the Rams. But like as far as that dominant force in the middle that they can't stop.
So let me ask you this thing, Keith. If he's that good, why did we give up almost 4,000 rushing yards? And yes, he missed some time.
He can't do it alone.
I understand that, but he wasn't alone. He had Brian Burns, who's supposed to be an all-pro.
Was supposed to be.
Well, you know, so it's not like he's alone.
Kayvon was hurt. Had Aziz was hurt.
Yeah, and you know what? And that's what's crazy about Kayvon is because Ojulari played less games. Ojulari played less games and had more sacks than Kayvon Thibodeau. The Giants.
He's good. He's gone.
He's gone. And I would have traded him at the deadline.
Exactly. But that's just, yeah. I said that before. How do you not trade him?
Like I said, man, and that's why you got to. But that's why you got to be aggressive too. Do you know what Dexter Lawrence could bring back? I mean, you know. I would call the Bengals. I don't know if Joe Burrow's untouchable. I have no idea. But would you not call the Bengals and say, hey, what can I get? Can I get Joe Burrow for Dexter Lawrence?
Thanks for the call, Blake.
What?
I'm sorry, bro. I gave you a little bit of rope, but we got too far. Yeah. Yeah, the Bengals, after the season that Joe Burrow just had to almost get them into the playoffs, right? After watching Ja'Marr Chase go absolutely insane. Ja'Marr Chase, who played at LSU with Joe Burrow. They already paid Joe Burrow. Ja'Marr Chase, who just had 1,700 yards, 127 receptions, 17 touchdowns. The Giants can call Joe Burrow, who had a house call against them, in MetLife Stadium this year. The Giants can call the Cincinnati Bengals and say, yeah, we'll trade you Dexter Lawrence for Joe Burrow.
I think I'm going to...
These Giants fans are down bad. They're down tremendous. It's a quarterback-driven league.
Can we do Dexter and Malik? Would that get a
Dexter
done?
And Malik neighbors for Joe Burrow?
Would that get a done?
Already have Ja'Marr Chase.
They have killer wide receivers.
Yeah, they got to figure out how to keep T. Higgins. I fear they're not going to be able to. But
Burrow was very, very vocal in the postgame about keeping T. Higgins in the room.
Because he knows.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 weeks ago, what was it, or 3 weeks ago, T. Higgins had that 3-touchdown game. Like, you need both. You need 2 receivers in this league. You need a quarterback in this league. You're not trading your franchise quarterback from Ohio. Mm-mm. No way. And I will not say one bad word about Dexter Lawrence. He's like that. Watch. You can look it up. And it just, man, I don't know. I don't have to tell Giants fans about Dexter Lawrence. I shouldn't have to tell you about Dexter Lawrence. Maybe it's too high of praise to compare him to Aaron Donald. But I said, once Aaron Donald left the league, who's the next guy? Dexter Lawrence. Who's the next guy that these centers have to deal with, that these guards have to deal with, that they can't stop? He's an immovable force. He's a winner, but he's on a losing team. He's on a losing franchise. And if you get rid of him, there goes another leader. There goes another captain. There goes another guy who was part of the fabric of what you had. And I know that Shane is trying to build his own team and his own image. Or it ain't working, though. You need some proven players. Ed is in Marlboro. Ed, you're on the Fan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just want you to know, I don't like Shane or Dable. I want them both gone. But the thing is, they won that year. They didn't draft any of those players they had. That was all Gettleman's people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they finally drafted the next year, when they had the 5 and 7 pick, we got nothing for it.
Yep. And they started getting rid of Gettleman's guys.
Huh?
And they started to slowly get rid of Gettleman's guys.
Right, but they won with Gettleman's guys.
Yeah, so you can't even really give them credit for that. They inherited those players.
Right. So what have they really done?
They hit on a good draft class for a 3-win team. Thanks for the call, Ed. Mike is in Wall Township. Mike, you're on the Fan.
Oh, man, I'm following up some great ones there, Keith. What are we doing here? I'm a big Giant fan. I'm loving what you're saying. First of all, going back to the argument you were having with your producer a little while ago about the whole they had that 9-win season that cost them because they won. Winning never cost you, first of all.
Right.
Second of all, the decision they messed up in that instance, which I was wanting them to do in the first place, if you still weren't sure about Jones, which they weren't, the mistake they made was Barkley was always the guy. Pay him, franchise Jones. That's where they messed up in that instance.
It's cheaper.
Franchise Jones,
yep.
Right there.
Yep.
Franchise Jones right there and pay Barkley because he's your proven guy. You know what you've gotten him.
Yeah, but these guys have like a book. They must have wrote a book. There's an imaginary book that exists somewhere in Giants land where they kept driving home quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. You're not going to pay a running back. They devalued Saquon even the year before. I remember Saquon doing the podcast talking about, like, I'm not a regular running back. I'm used in the passing game. I block. They hand me the ball 30 times a game. Like, you can't just act like I'm any one of these running backs in the league. I'm more valuable than that.
1,000%, Keith. Can't agree with you more. And that's why, like, I don't trust these guys going into this draft because they're so bereft of talent. The guy who just called up trying to trade Dexter Lawrence, first of all, trade him for Burrow. That's hilarious. But trading Dexter Lawrence, you can't trade. You're so bereft of talent. The guys that you have, you
trade arguably your best player.
You got rid of McKinney. You got rid of Barkley. You got rid of all these guys. You can't trade them.
Didn't you get rid of Leonard Williams knowing that you weren't going to keep him and you paid Dexter Lawrence?
100%. 100%. And then on top of that, now going into this draft, you're right. First of all, I'm not sold on either of these quarterbacks at the top. So I love the position they're in, especially if it's Hunter, because I believe that he's the best guy in the draft. So I'm praying that it comes down to him. But I don't trust these guys. So the last thing I want to see happen is them to either reach on a quarterback or trade up for one of these guys. Stay at 3, get Hunter. I don't mind. If they want to trade back up into the bottom of the first round and get a Milroe or a Dart or somebody that they believe in at that point, fine. I'm fine with that. But stay where you're at with that 3 pick. Take Hunter. One more quick Yankee point that I want to make to you real quick, because I know you're a big Yankee guy. When they were talking, they're talking about some of the guys that they're rumored to possibly be interested in here and there. And the one guy, I know defensively he's not great, but the one guy I would love to bring in, put him into the leadoff spot because he's the best bat-to-ball hitter in the league, lefty Luis Arraez. And, I mean, what better guy to have? You put Judge back in the two-hole, Arraez leads off. You're literally announcing Judge in the lineup. You're saying, all rise for Judge.
I like what you did there, Mike. 888-808-1019. We're going to get to those conversations with Jim Duquette in the next 10, 15 minutes here. But let's continue with the Giants calls. And I think I got a Cowboys call if I can sneak it in there. Lawrence in Oklahoma City, back on the Fan in New York.
Hey, what's up, Keith? Two Giants points I'd like to make. It's a we're trying to establish a culture, and like accountability really should be right at the top of that list when you're trying to establish culture. And this season sucked. And we didn't get 1 pound of meat from anything for this other than Daniel Jones. And that was a foregone conclusion that he was going to be done at the end of the year if he had sucked like he did. And then as far as quarterback goes, I really think if we draft later and we get the bridge quarterback, it has to be a bridge that has like an open-ended story still. and not somebody who has, like, has already decided that's a permanent backup. Like, I would love to see Justin Fields. He's 25. He spent a whole year with Tomlin. That kid has to be worth whatever you can get him for, just to see where he's at. I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Lawrence. I was talking about Justin Fields and how in the beginning of the year, he was off the mark a little bit with some of his throws, but now he's just spent a year watching film with Russell Wilson. I think he's going to be improved. He's been in the Pittsburgh Steelers culture. He's been with Mike Tomlin. And if you could imagine some of the throws that he did make early in the year with George Pickens, imagine him throwing the ball to Malik Nabers. Also, if you can imagine how Brian Daboll was able to make Daniel Jones effective, it was like first read, second read, not there, take off and run. Same system would be in place for Justin Fields. First read is Malik Nabers. Second read, Wandale Robinson. If it's not there, get what you can with your legs. And then you'll scheme some other things like handing the ball to Tyrone Tracy. Or if you draft Travis Hunter, you have some gadget plays for him. I think Justin Fields is a legitimate New York Giants target at quarterback. And then they could still have a Jackson Dart or someone drafted early learning behind him. And I don't know. That's what has to happen. All right, last call before we go to break. Jack is in California on the Fan in New York. What's up, Jack?
What up, Keith? How we doing tonight?
Hanging in there, talking the talk.
Yeah, so the Cowboys. Do you watch the TV show Landman? It's with Billy Bob Thornton. It's on Paramount Plus.
No, but I saw the clip of Jerry Jones acting, and it just pissed me off more. I'm like, Jerry Jones got time for everything else.
Oh my Lord. That monologue was brutal. It's where he bought the Cowboys because he just wanted to work with his family. Go buy a grocery store if we're going to do that.
That's what he says in the movie?
God dang it. Terrible.
Yeah, see, that's why I didn't click on it. That's why I didn't watch it.
The premise of it is, yeah.
Are you a Dallas fan? I guess you're a Dallas fan.
I'm going to give him a little credit. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Miserably for 30 years. But
likewise.
The context of the show is that whatever. Bro, I moved from Los Angeles to New York, and I'm still freezing now. It's terrible. Anyways, basically the point of it was that got main characters dying, so he's like, I bought the Cowboys to work with my family. That's why oil. And I'm like, all right, terrible. But pretty good acting job. Secondly, I might be in my delusional Cowboys phase, like, really early, because I'm not seeing the sky fall. I mean, Jerry Jones is his own thing, but second half of the season, Rico Dowdle crushed it. Our offensive line, which was either a first year or second year, they crushed it the second half of the season.
They weren't playing for anything. It's easy to crush it when you're out of the playoffs. When you lose five games in a row, there's no pressure. And shout out to Rico Dowdle. He helped me win third place 100%. In my fantasy league. But that's the same thing they're talking about with Aaron Rodgers. Look at his numbers at the end of the year. Yeah, it's easy when the stakes aren't high.
Oh, I'm not talking about the numbers. I'm just talking about the cohesiveness. It's like when we drafted Zeke and he went off those first two seasons, that lineman core was together for 3-4 years. Yes, we had some all pros and some amazing draft picks, but you have to say the Cowboys draft's fantastic. And with all of our luck, we're going to get Ashawn Jenkins, like you said last week.
They don't draft fantastic. They get extremely lucky. Thanks for the call, Jack. I'm sorry that you spent the last three decades rooting for the Dallas Cowboys. I apologize to everybody who got suckered into the Super Bowls and the commercials and the triplets and America's team. Yeah, they got me too. When I was 5, I could barely go to the bathroom correctly, and I chose my football team. So think about that. I've been stuck with them ever since. I know how to use the bathroom now, trying to teach my son how to go to the bathroom. But yeah, the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones. Like, I don't care about what you do when you're free, after you free fall. They lost 5 in a row. The season was over. Once Dak was out, like, Jerry Jones dragged his feet to pay Dak, and he got painted into a corner. Dak is a 4th-round pick. You could have locked him up. You know how much money Dak is going to make? Like, over $350 million off the Dallas Cowboys. A 4th-round pick. Robbing Jerry Jones. Never believed in him. That's why. Never believed in him. And what did he do? Didn't pick up his rookie option. franchised him multiple times, had to give him a short contract to prove it again. He proves it as an MVP type of year. That contract runs out. You got to give him the highest paid quarterback contract of all time. But didn't you trade for Trey Lance to undermine him? Didn't you trade for Trey Lance and put him in that quarterback room without asking anybody in the organization if you should do that? Jerry Jones is a joke. The Cowboys are an absolute joke. And the fact that he came out and said what he said, like, I didn't watch that stupid clip from him being in a movie. Jerry Jones got time for everything. Jerry Jones got court cases to deal with, you know, kids that he doesn't want to claim. Jerry Jones got a Netflix special coming out, America's Team, trying to explain to the younger generation of Dallas fans whose parents made them Dallas fans that, hey, actually, we did win. Like, we were going to Super Bowls. I was in the second grade the last time the Dallas Cowboys went to an NFC championship. So I froze my account because I'm just not dumb. Like, I'm not about to continue. Fool me, can't fool me again. I'm not going to continue with Jerry Jones. I'm out until Jerry Jones is out. And he made it clear that he's not going to be out. He made it clear that he's, like, this is a passion project. He made it clear that he is general manager of the Dallas Cowboys, and that's why he bought the team. Nah, Jerry, we need football people, not family. That's great and all that you wanted to work with your family. It's great that you have a $10.1 billion franchise. But you've had a ton of talent, right? Jack is talking about the Cowboys draft. Well, no, they just get lucky. Micah Parsons falls into their lap. CeeDee Lamb falls into their lap. Dak Prescott falls into their lap. But then they fumble the bag with these guys. They don't sign them early. They're blessed that Micah Parsons has drank the Jerry Jones Kool-Aid to the point where he's saying, I don't need to be the highest paid player. What? You don't need to be the highest paid defensive player? You're up for that. You know, I want to win. You're never going to win with Jerry Jones. Because that star on the helmet, he looks in the mirror and he sees himself. He's the star. Jerry Jones is the star. And he's just, like, look at the running back room. They signed Dalvin Cook this year. They signed Ezekiel Elliott this year. Derrick Henry lives in Dallas in the offseason. Wanted to be a Dallas Cowboy. They didn't even call him. They said they couldn't afford him. Sure you could. If you didn't wait until the end of camp to sign CeeDee Lamb, should have signed him earlier. If you didn't wait until literally Sunday week one to announce that you signed Dak Prescott to the largest contract ever, they're fools. They've made a ton of mistakes, and they wonder where they are. They drafted Taco Charlton. Like, they drafted Mazi Smith. Even Guyton. Like, these two guys have terrible grades. The lowest graded players were their two first-round picks the last 2 years. America's team to laugh at. How about them? The Dallas Cowboys. 888-808-1019. That's a good way to end the football conversation for now. When we come back, Jim Duquette will join us to talk about the Mets, to talk about the Yankees, to talk a little baseball, because football season is over for the Cowboys, for the Jets, for the Giants, and we are about a month away until we start pitchers and catchers and dreaming of a baseball season. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Joining me right now, my first guest of the night as we switch gears and talk a little baseball, it is my guy, I've had him on before, Jim Duquette, former MLB GM for the Mets and the Orioles. He's an analyst. You probably see him on SNY. You've heard him on MLB Network, seen him pretty much everywhere. If you're a baseball fan, you know who Jim Duquette is. Welcome in, Jim.
Keith, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. Watching a Pittsburgh Duke basketball game. And what I told everybody earlier in the show is, like, all of this negative talk about the Jets and Giants, like, we can't do it all night. I'm a baseball fan. I'm starting to get the itch. It's 2025 yep. Now. We're a week into the new year. In a month, we're going to be talking about pitchers and catchers. And that's my first question for you. As a former GM, you know, what's the planning like? What's the timeline like? Especially when you get to this point, right? The holidays are past, and we know there's a little bit of a slowdown. But now you have about a month until you got to ship down to Florida, and there's so much that has to go on to be ready for spring training. Like, what's this time like as far as signing players and filling out the roster?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot to go on, right? I mean, maybe the Dodgers and the Cubs. They play, I believe they open in Japan. February 10th is their reporting day. So we're almost a month away. I think with, Met speaking or any team for that matter, if you still have holes on your roster, I mean, that's the number one focus. And you've got a couple of other things like you've got tender contracts coming up on Thursday. You're trying to deal with the arbitration eligible guys. So there's always something in the baseball calendar, but then your eyes are focused on spring training. You might have some, depending on your staff, you might have some meetings, you know, kind of having spring training meetings about the first couple of days of spring training and what those look like, you know, just some of the workouts, because those change. You want to tweak them over, or, you know, from year to year. So there's always something along those lines. And then, you know, what we try to do, and a lot of teams still do, they'll put together kind of a development plan, a strength and weakness plan of a lot of their players, because there's a lot more development that goes on at the major league level. And, you know, you put that together and talk to your coaches about how you're going to attack that, even though a lot of these guys are competing for opening.
All right, you're breaking up a little bit, Paulie. Jim, can you still hear me?
Did I lose you? You there?
Yeah, you know, we still got you. We lost you for a minute. Okay. You're getting me pumped up for baseball. I'm ready. I wish I was part of a baseball team. I wish I was a part of all of that, because as a fan, you know, we just sit here and wait for the warm stove to heat up and get breaking news. And, you know, today we heard Justin Verlander is signed with the Giants. That's a small move. But, you know, baseball's free agency, it's a long, drawn-out thing. There's so many people that talk about, oh, it's not like the NFL. It's not like, you know, the NBA with a free agency frenzy. And a lot of times the big-ticket guys, we've seen them not sign until late February, March, and I'm looking at Pete Alonso like, this is a guy that I don't think he's going to get this, but it was floated out there that Scott Boras wants him to get the Cecil Fielder deal for $214 million over 9 years or something ridiculous like that. But this is a guy that is waiting to get paid, and I think the wait is going to be a little bit longer for Pete, and I feel like he's going to have to just fold. He's going to have to give in. I think there's an offer out there from the Mets that's significantly less than where they were during last season. And, you know, you can't hate the player, hate the game. It's just where we are. How do you feel about Pete Alonso returning to the Mets and what the price tag will be?
Well, Keith, I would love to see that. I think it's the perfect fit, especially when you look at, you know, the other available teams that are looking for, you know, offensive help, first base help in particular, and are willing to spend money. You know, the one team that concerns me that's still out there that wants to spend money are the Giants. And I'm not so sure Pete would find that a good destination spot, especially if it was a short-term deal, you know, with an opt-out clause like we saw with Cody Bellinger a couple years ago. And, you know, we saw it with Blake Snell and Matt Chapman with the Giants, you know, last year. So you know, I think all of that being said, you know, the Giants want to spend money. They're looking to get better. And they could use some offensive help, especially at either first base or DH. So you can't rule out those kind of sneaky sleeper teams. That's the concern I have for the Mets. I think at the end of the day, you know, David Stearns and Steve Cohen are going to make sure that he stays there. I think it's kind of a stare down right now, it looks like and sounds like. And, you know, it takes another, you know, competitive offer or two before you're willing to move the offer up a little bit. I think in the end, I've seen those same rumors, the high end side. I've also seen the rumors on the low end side, a 3-year deal of $90 million. I mean, right now, I don't see that being a possibility either. But the later this goes, you know, Pete might have to readjust his sights a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the stare down is between Pete Alonso and Scott Boras. I don't think the Mets are looking hard. I think the Mets are like, here's where we are. This is what we can do. This is where we, you know, value you at. We, you know, we appreciate you, but we're not really budging right now because we don't have to. And I think Pete has got to be looking at Scott Boras and the years and the money that he got for Juan Soto and, you know, going to switch representation to Boras Corp and thinking about, hey, man, like, this is my big payday. What do you think about the Anaheim Angels? I've joked about how, you know, we watch games in the Big A and you see Scott Boras behind home plate and, you know, the Angels usually spend money. And that's another thing, too, with the timing, right? If Pete Alonso is to uproot his life from the East Coast and go to the Giants or the Angels, like, the decision has to be made now. I look at guys like Christian Walker. He made his decision very quickly. Even a Gleyber Torres, like, they got wrapped up by the holidays, and I think that's because they have family and they're going to have to move. What do you think about Pete potentially going to Anaheim and playing for the Angels?
Well, I think if a team is willing to pay him the type of money that he's looking for, Anaheim in Southern California is not a bad place to go. Watching that team over the last couple, we know that they're struggling. They had a franchise worse in terms of the number of losses last year. And yeah, their general manager and their owner, they're looking to get better, but a lot of that's been health related stuff too, right? Trout spent a lot of time on the IL, so was Anthony Rendon. So, Pete, I don't think would want to go there because they don't have a chance to win, but he's also you don't hire Scott Boras unless you're trying to maximize your contract as much as possible. And it wasn't that long ago, though, you got to go back to the Machado years and the Harper when they first signed their deals in Philly and San Diego. Those guys waited. They had a chance to sign early in January. They decided to go back out and renegotiate, and then they found suitors to give them the type of money they were looking for. So I don't doubt anything that Scott Boras does these days, in terms of getting with the number that they're looking for. So I think Pete hasn't been with Scott all that long, but I know this, that, you're not going to Scott Boras unless you're at the end of the day going to get the most money. So if that market crashes at some point, they'll have to readjust their asking prices here, and Pete may not be happy at the end of the day, but I'm not doubting Boras because this guy more times than not ends up with getting the money that he's looking for.
We're on the phone right now with Jim Duquette, former Mets GM and MLB analyst. You know, when I look at Pete, I just look at him as a lifetime Met. I look at him as a guy that can put up numbers where maybe they retire too. His number. And now there's a lot of talk about David Wright, and we know how Steve Cohen has really done his due diligence here with Keith Hernandez and Doc and Darryl, and now we're getting the David Wright ceremony for, the Mets fans. What can they expect in July when they honor one of their favorites all time?
You know what? I agree with you on Pete being an all-time Met. I would love to see it. I think it's a good comparison with David Wright, even though I don't think Pete's going to be the captain of the New York Mets anytime. I think that, in terms of being an all-time Met, the all-time power hitter, home run hitter for the Mets, I mean, he has a chance to be the number one all-time if he stays in New York. And I think the other thing that, I mean, you know this from being in New York, and we've seen this multiple times in both clubhouses and both ballparks, and New York isn't for everybody, right? And Pete's one guy who has proven that he, thrives in New York. You can't underestimate that. So I don't think this is the case. I don't think the Mets are taking that, lightly. I think from Pete's side of things, I think that should be a part of that, of the consideration. I think ownership, would recognize that too. So that's why I feel like this, and listen, going further than that, and you've said this, I've heard you say this too, but hey, the Mets need Pete just as much as Pete needs them, I think. So, for me, I'd love to see this get done. Obviously, we'd love to see it sooner rather than later, and I think that it'll happen that way.
Yeah, I expect him to be a Met. I think when all things are considered, if the money isn't that much greater in California, he's going to stay here. And now this new era of the Mets, they have Juan Soto. He can hit behind Juan Soto. The team is going to be better with Juan Soto, and I expect him to see him standing out there when David Wright gets honored. And, I feel like the Met fans really need that. I feel like this whole Steve Cohen, David Stearns era, a lot of it is about rebranding, but also pride and history. And, losing Pete after losing DeGrom, I feel like you're starting to shed some of those, core Mets that fans love so much.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you on that. I hate to see it. I would love, when it comes to Pete and the homegrown aspect of it, him in the lineup, I mean, you want to talk about a guy, a couple years ago, he drove in almost 100 or over 120 runs. That offense was on fire that year. I guess it was 22 now. With Soto in the lineup and the way the top of the lineup looks, and then even the protection that Pete would have, hitting, let's say hitting behind Soto, whoever it is behind him, whether it's, whether it turns out to be Nimmo or Francisco Alvarez, because I think he's going to have a bounce back year, or whoever it is, maybe it's the, maybe it's a DH, maybe it's Vientos. Pete Alonso is poised to have a big year, and I think that you can't underestimate the quality of the lineup with him in it. So, you know, I agree. I think Pete, you know, would understands that too. You know, so that's where that dollar amount, you know, there has to be some give and take on both sides here. And you know, listen, Pete, we've talked a lot about this on SNY. A lot of the other options, good options for Pete, have dried up, you know, with mm-hmm. other signings and trades. So he's running out of good ones to sign, especially teams that are willing to pay the kind of money that he was originally looking for.
Yeah, I feel like Pete's not going to want to take a short-term deal, but it is what it is. I think this has played out perfectly for the Mets. He had a down year last year, so his value isn't that high, but I feel like his value is higher to the Mets because of what he did in the postseason and mm-hmm. the prospect of him hitting behind Juan Soto. I think eventually we're just going to come to a point where we get the breaking news that Pete Alonso's a Met. But then I also think about, you know, his own ego and his own feelings from, you know, everything we heard that they gave Juan Soto to now even news coming out that they're looking at other players like a Tanner right. Scott, like an Alex Verdugo. It's like, hey, how is there, you know, chirping about you guys looking to sign some other guys, even like a Jesse Winker. I read an article about Jerks and Profar. So obviously they're looking for another outfielder potentially and adding right. to their bullpen. Do you think those moves happen before Pete because they're, you know, obviously not as expensive?
Right. Well, you know, I think that when you kind of look at the free agency and the way it has gone, and you know, there's a ton of relievers out on the market, and Scott is one of the he might be the best available right now. You know, I think, you know, they're looking at 3-year deals. They're looking at 10, 11, 12, could be even more than that, $1 million per year. They're expensive. That's why they've been sitting there for now. But yeah, I do think there's a time and place for the relief market to start to get hot, and you're starting to see some of those names, you know, a little bit more and more. So, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Tanner Scott signed before Pete, but, you know, in the same breath, you know, I think, you know, Pete's, you know, his representation has to, I think, understand that too, that, hey, listen, the longer this goes, the more uncomfortable it gets for everybody. So I don't know. These are hard to predict, Scott Boris. You know, whenever you see rumors out there, yes, does Scott tend to lay some of that information out there? Maybe it's not him personally, but somebody within their organization. Of course, even though he'll deny it, you know, that number, $200 million, I'd be stunned if Pete got near that at this point in the wintertime.
Yeah, I think that's off the table. Switching gears here with the Yankees, as I mentioned, Alex Verdugo, who played for the Yankees last year, and you mentioned that, you know, playing in New York, not everybody can play in New York. It's, you know, a big thing when you're looking at evaluating players. You hope that they'll be able to handle it. I think the Mets have used a formula where, hey, if they can play for the Yankees, they might be able to get it done over here as well. Marcus Stroman, a guy who played for the Mets and the Yankees and is a New Yorker, the Yankees are shopping him. What do you think the market mm-hmm. is for Marcus Stroman? I think the Yankees obviously are just trying to offload that money so they can do some other things.
Yeah, I think that they are. I mean, they'd like to, you know, they obviously have a lot of pitching. They never can have enough, but they have enough quality. I don't think Marcus is going to be all that happy if he is pitching out of the bullpen. He's still shown that he can start. So I understand it. Now, this is the time of the year where, you know, you start to look at that aspect of it and see if you can get a team to that's short in starting pitching to have interest in Stroman. He's still a quality, I'd say, more of a number four type starter now. You know, and we'll see if the Yankees can do that. They, as you know, they need help at either second or third base. It doesn't seem like they're going to extend their payroll too much. Too much more. They've done a pretty good job of it, in my opinion. So, you know, if they're able to save some money and then you know, use it for an upgrade in either of those positions, I think that's a smart idea there by the Yankees. So, you know, we'll wait and see. I think there should be plenty of suitors, even if it's not you know, a winning team for you know, like you talked about the Angels. The Angels need pitching all the time. Yeah, you know, that would be a really good fit, and they're still willing to take on some money.
What do you think about Luis Arraez? That's the hot name in Yankee land, and there's pushback from some Yankee fans that say, hey, he's not athletic, he's not a good base runner, he's not a great fielder, and that's what the Yankees are trying to get away from. And then there's also Yankee fans, which I'm in this camp, I'm like, listen, you need a leadoff hitter. And a guy that can bat 400 for stretches of the season, like, you'll be able to overcome some of the other things. You're able to overcome Gleyber Torres. And I know that A.J. Preller and Brian Cashman have a relationship, and I remember Luis Arraez getting traded so early in the season last year, which kind of made me say, like, hey, like, this guy could have been had. How come the Yankees didn't get him last year? What do you think about him and his trade market?
Well, so a lot of this with San Diego, you know, you saw some stuff going on there. They've got some ownership issues with the passing of their previous owner, right? Peter Seiler, and his wife now has gotten involved with trust up there. So, you know, there's some debate, and I think that it's true that they are going to have to try to save some money. And Arraez is one of those guys. Is, you know, he's been on the move now a couple of years in a row. He's also led the league in hitting a couple years in a row. So that's what he does. The guy can flat out hit, and, you know, I think it would be an excellent fit. Yeah, defensively, he's not as strong, but, you know, Torres had his struggles, you know, occasionally, as you know, with the Yankees at second base. I think personally he would be an upgrade for them in that spot, and I think they could overcome the defensive limitations that Arraez has, even if it was a late inning replacement. So I would be all for it if they could do it. That would definitely improve their offense. And, you know, Arraez is one of those guys. I mean, he was a huge part of San Diego winning last year. So, you know, he's that type of player that you like, as long as you understand he's not he is limited. He doesn't steal bases. He gets on base mostly because he's such a good hitter. He's a great bat-to-ball contact type of offensive player. He can lead off, like you mentioned. And, you know, defensively, you know, you won't be happy on some nights. He might cost you a game or two, but he'll win you more than he loses you.
Last thing for you, Jim, as a former GM, right? You have plans laid out. You have things that you want to do, but you're competing against the entire league, and free agents can sign where they want to go, so sometimes plans change. The Yankees' plan A was to bring back Juan Soto, and the Mets were able to get him. But what do you think about Brian Cashman and his ability to pivot and go out there and sign Max Fried, trade for Devin Williams, sending Nestor Cortez and Caleb Durbin to Milwaukee, sign Paul Goldschmidt, you know, trade for Fernando Cruz and send the backup catcher, Jose Trevino, over there, trade Cody Poteet, who really just started like 3 or 4 games for the Yankees, and get Cody Bellinger. Like, what do you think about Brian Cashman's ability to pivot, which wouldn't have been able to happen if they signed Juan Soto?
I mean, I think they've had the best winter of anybody in the sport. I really do. I think, you know, the money that they've spent, notwithstanding, let's put that aside and just look at the holes that they have filled. You know, they got to the World Series and was a flawed team. I think this, you could argue, is a better, well-rounded team. Listen, Soto is one of the best hitters, not just in season, but in the postseason. So they'll miss his bat. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, I think they, if Brian Cashman has done many times when he evaluates his team around the middle of the summer and he looks and sees where they're short, he's going to go out and fill in. You know, via the trade market, maybe there's a, you know, a guy from their system that comes up and helps out. So, like, they're going to be very good. I think they're the team to beat in the American League East, and I think that the Mets are the team to beat, one of the teams to beat in the National League. So I'm looking forward to it. I know you are too, of a really fun baseball season in summer in New York, especially with those two teams.
Yes, sir. Jim, you're the man. We appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us tonight.
All right, Keith, man. Good to be back with you. Thanks. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Jim Duquette, former GM of the Mets and Baltimore Orioles, MLB analyst on MLB Network Radio, Sirius XM. You guys see him all the time on SNY. Man, I had to ask him that last question about the Yankees just to remind some of y'all. Reminder, this wouldn't have been able to happen without Juan Soto's departure. And I think everybody in baseball is saying, hey, the Yankees have had a hell of a winter, they're also not done. And like Jim just reminded you, you can improve your team at the trade deadline. Brian Cashman will do that. And if we were able to get to the World Series last year, yes, we can do it again. We can get right back.
Yeah, I think the Yankee, I think if you ask most Yankee fans, they'd probably say they'd signing Juan Soto would have been the first choice because he's that good, obviously. But what Brian Cashman has done, repeatedly doing previously, just shutting up everyone who says he has a lifetime contract, and maybe he does. But you know what? Look what he's doing. He's earned the lifetime contract.
Yeah, he's pretty good at his job.
He's really good at his job. And by the way, if the Yankees ever let him go in the near future, he will be able to get a job.
He wouldn't go anywhere
two
else.
Seconds after. Because any is no, team would want to
hire
him.
There is no world where he's fired. So that's why I remember telling all y'all, you're wasting your time with the Fire Cashman night and the Fire Cashman t-shirts. There is no world where the Yankees fire him. And there is no world where he goes and does this for another team.
No.
His legacy is the New York Yankees.
Absolutely. Cashman gets the guys that he thinks the Yankees need to actually win games. He doesn't play, though. He can't perform on the field.
Right.
That's up to the professionals that are making millions upon millions of dollars to actually perform.
In this town, there is just a different bar for the Yankees. The Yankees are always good. They're always in the postseason. Even when they lose the MVP and they go 82-80, they're still two games above 500. And then they bounce back the next year by going to the World Series. They lose Juan Soto after losing the World Series. It's hard to overcome. But I'm so excited to see a new squad. It's a new team. There are going to be a few new good players.